Welcome to Day Zero Update for January 21st, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Danra Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a busy week this week of news. A bunch of games got dates. Mm-hmm. Some a little more vague, but you know, we got what we got. We got one game's long-running DLC ending here pretty soon. We got a very dumb lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I think so. And even though it's the third week of 2024, we still got a bunch of layoffs going on as companies have not taken the early part of the year off at all.
Nope.
And then we got the Developer Direct, the Xbox Developer Direct, to talk about a little bit of the stuff that's there.
Yep.
Not too much. Five games. But we'll talk about that stuff later. But before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a good bit of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
Yeah.
The newest game in that series that is taking the mechanics of the more recent titles, the action focus heavy platformer stuff, and kind of turning into a Metroid style game.
Mm-hmm.
Very much with a maybe a lot of influence from Metroid Dread in that, but with a lot more focus on accessibility and kind of being more friendly to the player than the Metroid games typically are. There are options for, you know, difficulty, but you can also customize that to increase your damage to the enemy damage and all that kind of stuff to make it fit the way that you are able to play, especially being able to like open up the windows for parries and that kind of stuff to make that easier if that's your thing, or you can make it tighter to make it even more of a challenge if you want. So that's some really cool stuff to have here. I think the only accessibility stuff I've seen that's not there for whatever reason, there's a need for colorblind options or better ones. As I've seen, I think Jeff Gerstmann, who was basically saying you couldn't tell the difference between the two different like color like rings that appear around attacks. There's yellow and then red. You could not see the difference between them in any meaningful way, and I don't think any of the typical kind of colorblind options in there work out for him either way. And it's like, yeah, you should probably just let people set that stuff independently to what works for them versus trying to create, you know, profiles that supposedly work for, you know, the major types of it, because it seems like that's just from what I've seen Jeff say a lot is that it never really seems to fix the issues that he has with seeing stuff in games when they make things color specific for that stuff. And the other one that kind of sticks out really easily early on is the lack of auto advance for dialogue in the game. They have a lot of voice dialogue in the game that I would probably like more if it could more easily just kind of auto advance, much like any JRPG and whatnot happens. But this one just does not have that, and it kind of makes me more likely to skip through dialogue than pay attention to whatever's going on here, which it's not really anything amazing story-wise. A lot of it is that you're playing as Sargon, one of the immortals, like one of the newer recruits for that. And they are on, you know, you start the tutorials, this mission that they go on, and upon it being successful, you get a commendation from the Queen of Persia, as well as her son, the prince. And then you find out the prince has been kidnapped by one of the immortals. And that's a whole big thing. Taken to this mysterious area called Mount Kaf, QAF, that as you get there, you find out that there's a lot of weird stuff going on here, especially time-related, as you find people that were part of the crew kidnapping the king or the prince, and you find them dying as like they've been there for 30 years, even though they got there, you know, the night before kind of thing. And so you find lots of weird stuff happening here. But along the way, you're kind of trying to figure out what's the deal with this person, what they're doing, and how this place is sort of corrupting and affecting people around you that that are trying to, you know, solve the big problem here. So, yeah, some pretty basic stuff, but some decent characters there. But yeah, the gameplay is really well done. The combat's really well done, especially if you when you get to the area. There's a place for doing these challenges that shows you more things you can do with the combat versus the basic stuff you have. And there's quite a bit of nuance to the various combat mechanics that they have, especially as they give you more powers to it, like the dash and some of the other stuff that they give you that makes it kind of a pretty cool combat system. Maybe up there with some of my favorites in the genre, like Guacamelee has a really cool combat system, that kind of stuff. This has a lot of good stuff going on there. And yeah, I put about eight, nine hours into this and have made a good amount of progress. I don't know how far into it I am. Probably good halfway through, maybe less. I don't know. But yeah, it doesn't really show progress super well, at least on the map screen or anything. Maybe it's on when I load up the save. I should check that. But yeah, seems really good. I'm playing on PS5. Runs really well. As far as I've seen, it runs well on everything. So you shouldn't really have an issue with this game on Switch or PC, Xbox, or PlayStation, wherever you're playing. So that's a game that people should check out. If they want a new, higher budget one of these games, because we haven't really had anything that much like this since Metroid Dread a couple of years ago. So there you go for that. The other game I'm playing that came out this week, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered. This is the PS5 port of the, you know, very popular, very highly awarded Last of Us Part 2 that improves the graphics a good bit, makes the game look a decent bit better. I wasn't running the original side-by-side or anything to try and compare it, but it still looks really good on PS5. I did play a bit more of the campaign when I started, just to kind of get used to the mechanics, because it's different than the way I would just assume offhand, but they do a good job of throwing a bunch of pop-ups for you if you have not played for a while, to be like, hey, here's, you know, how the various mechanics work and all that if you need it, as well as you can check out the no return mode, which is the new roguelite mode that's added to the game, that essentially offers you kind of a tree of encounters, I think up to about 5 or 6, I think, total to beat the run, that set them in different maps in the game. They do try to say, like, you should probably beat the game first, which I think is probably more due to being familiar with these areas and the different kinds of infected and enemies that you can run into, human enemies. I just kind of jumped into it, having played about like 9-10 hours of the campaign. So there's certainly a number of faction enemies and such that I did not know or haven't seen in action, that kind of stuff. But they throw you into these different encounters with different kind of statuses for the enemies, of like them being in a hunted state, sort of check, you know, frantically searching for you, or being in assault mode, which is them knowing you're around and kind of searching for you. They may have like a more cautious kind of mode where they're not really aware of where you're at all, but you're often taking the weapons you have, which you start off with a pistol with Ellie and Abby, as your main characters, and as you complete challenges, usually the first characters will have, you know, play one run or complete an encounter or two encounters or something like that, and you'll unlock the next character, and so on and so forth. Generally, that's the it's pretty easy for the first challenge. But they have three others after that that you kind of work through that will add more stuff to do, either things about collecting weapons or, you know, doing various tests, that kind of stuff. But after you complete an encounter, some of which are just kind of one, like a certain period of time or certain amount of waves or that kind of stuff, it'll tell you like where they're coming from, that kind of stuff. And kind of after each wave, you get a little like chest that shows up to help you refill some supplies and such, but definitely not trying to be too nice to you, though they have 7 or 8 difficulties for this, as well as the ability to do custom runs if you want to fine tune things a bit, because there may be challenges that are reliant on fighting certain types of enemies, I assume. But that's definitely something that's neat to see, and I think they'll probably have like boss runs and that kind of stuff as well for that, but it's pretty fully featured for that. And yeah, there's 5 characters on each side, with you getting Tommy and Joel, I think, are the last two on Ellie's side, and you get 4 other of Abby's crew to play with there. But occasionally the challenges will be like, oh, you have, you know, Dina on this one to help you out, and they'll help you take out enemies, that kind of stuff, and take aggro away from you, that kind of stuff. So they had some nice wrinkles to the things that can happen, and they keep adding more stuff as you play more of it, get better scores, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And the other big thing they added is the lost levels, which are 3 levels from the development of the game that they ultimately took out. I think generally for each one they say it's like a pacing issue, but it kind of slowed things down too much for what they wanted out of that game. So they took these out, and they'll let you kind of play through them and activate little commentary boxes that will, you know, have commentary from a dev talking about, you know, different aspects of the level and reasons why it worked or didn't work, things they wanted, you know, goals for those things, and ultimately why it didn't work, that kind of stuff, as you explore. But you can kind of play them. One of them is kind of set back in Jackson, kind of in the outskirts of the party that you kind of see at one part of the game. You get to kind of explore and do some like carnival style games around the area, that kind of stuff. But yeah, as they also say, like, animations are not finished, and textures and, you know, graphics are not finished. These are like pre-alpha states, so they're kind of basically doing functionality passes versus anything to make it look really good. And there's generally no voice acting, though they will have subtitles to highlight when characters would say things, that kind of stuff. But it's really cool to see.
Yeah,
something you generally do not get out of any of these kind of releases, unless it's like a classics collection, like the Atari 50 or Making of Karateka type of stuff.
Yeah.
Which adds a lot to the game. Makes you appreciate sort of how much work goes into this stuff for that. So that's definitely another cool part of that. And they have some other things in there as well. I think they've added some more to the accessibility options, the stuff they added for the remake for part 1, that kind of stuff. And they have a free play for the guitar thing. And as you unlock skins and such, you can play with a bunch of characters in that playing the guitar, even up to Gustavo Santaolalla, the composer for the games, Last of Us games. You can play as him in there as well. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, that's $10 for an upgrade if you own the PS4 version. Otherwise, I think it's $60, something like that, full price. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely recommend getting that upgrade if you're interested. And now that I have this on a PS5, I may work my way through the campaign again, because I got a decent bit into it. I was making my way through Seattle, where I'm at, kind of just running into roving groups of WLF soldiers and dealing with them throughout the city. So that's been pretty cool. The last game I've been playing, I'm playing a little bit of this Pal World, the game that's been marketed as like Pokemon with guns, but it's a bit different than that. It's kind of basically your typical kind of crafting survival game of building up a base and building, you know, crafting tables and that kind of stuff to make more things. And as you level up and do all that, you get the ability to unlock more stuff to craft and make. And the hook is that as you catch more of these pals, you can assign them to your base to kind of help make things or craft things or do all sorts of farming and that kind of stuff, as well if they have the requisite abilities for that stuff.
Yep.
Which seems pretty random from what I'm seeing so far. So you're kind of encouraged to just constantly be catching them all around you so that you can see if you get, you know, ones with passive abilities that will help you on different parts of your base kind of stuff. And yeah, it's been kind of the loop there. It has some Breath of the Wild stuff to it, as you can climb up, you know, all sides of buildings and rock structures and all that kind of stuff with the stamina meter and all that. Day-night cycle has heat gauges, much like Breath of the Wild, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it seems all right. I don't know that it's as good as the sales numbers they're getting already, which is like 4 million in the past like 2 or 3 days. But it's still in early access, so hopefully it gets better. I was playing it on Xbox. The UI very much was not made for a console. It's very, very tiny text, like it's a PC game, which it is. I guess the Xbox versions are limited compared to the PC version. I think you can only have 4 people on a server on Xbox versus like 16 or 32 or whatever it is on PC. So that's something that they said they want to improve, but they'll have to talk to Microsoft about that. So, but it's on Game Pass, so you can check it out and see how it is. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as far as like gaming is concerned, one of the big things I've been playing this week is Fear and Hunger, which is, if you've been paying attention to any of the streamers over the last month or two, this was a game that basically kind of blew up for a number of reasons. It's not new. It was originally came out in 2019. And I think part of the reason why this game sort of suddenly became popular was because the sequel, Fear and Hunger Termina, came out, late last year. So in that way, it was kind of fresh on some people's minds, but also just kind of a word of mouth type thing. I have not played Fear and Hunger Termina, but I have been told that it's a lot like Fear and Hunger, but it also is more, I guess, straightforward and more RPG oriented. Because here's the thing you got to know about Fear and Hunger. It's an RPG maker game, and you would not know that unless, you know, you had, you know, the guy who developed it tell you directly, because the guts are RPG maker, but all of the assets are completely original. The character art, sprites, the animations, the environments, the music, the program, you know, all that stuff is entirely him. But Fear and Hunger, you must understand, is not an RPG. It looks like an RPG. It was made by RPG Maker. Its combat focus is very RPG-like. It has a very turn-based RPG-like combat system. But Fear and Hunger is not an RPG. If you try to play this game like an RPG, you will die almost immediately. Fear and Hunger is a survival horror game that happens to look like an RPG. this game teaches you that lesson basically at the very beginning, where you are heading up to the gate that goes into the dungeon that you will be spending the most of this game in, and are immediately attacked by a pack of wild dogs. And you will 9 times out of 10 be immediately killed. Because you are, you know, and unlike other RPGs, where it's like, you know, you'll, like, say you're playing Dragon Quest and you'll come across like a slime, and it won't be just one slime, it'll be 3 or 4 slimes, you know, in a group that are attacking you. That is very rare in this game. Most of the combat is a one-on-one situation. At most, you might have 2 enemies on the screen at the same time. But the thing is, unlike in other RPGs where you're just attacking the enemy as like a total being, enemies in this game all have health bars and, you know, that kind of thing for all of their individual limbs. So if you go up against a character that's got, you know, this typical 4 arms and 4 legs, each one of those limbs will have, you know, its own health bar, as well as the torso and the head. And that's mostly because fighting in this game is not so much a matter of trying to, like, level up and fight all the enemies you are, but using strategic avoidance and defense. A lot of the enemies in this game require a certain degree of strategy when you go up against them. One of the common enemies you'll go up against game, which is the dungeon guard, which is like this hulking mongoloid ogre looking guy who carries around like a meat cleaver. In order to, like, successfully attack them, you have to, first off, you have to remove the arm that is using the cleaver, because if you do not, they will very quickly take out a good chunk of your life. They also will more than likely remove one of your limbs and take it out of play for the rest of that playthrough. But if you remove that, then they will not be able to sever any limbs. Then after that, you have to attack their legs. That will knock them off balance, which will make their heads available to attack, and you can then get rid of them that way. That's just one example. The other thing about this game you have to understand is that combat in this game is something that has to be done rather than the whole point of the game. If you come across an enemy, you know, that attacks you, you're going to have to obviously fight them. Because, you know, most of the time you're going to want to try and avoid a lot of these guys, because you do not get, like, any experience points from fighting any of these enemies. All you do by fighting and defeating them is taking them out of play for the rest of the playthrough. That's it. They don't come back, at least not until you, like, save or change areas, you know, that kind of thing. And a lot of times you also won't even get, like, any items either. You will sometimes, depending on the enemy, if it's like a special enemy of some kind, but most of the time you will not. So the best thing that you can typically do is just try and avoid them unless you have to fight them. But yeah, so that's, more or less Fear and Hunger. The other reason I think this game took off as big as it did is for the shock factor. Fear and Hunger is not a game for children. Do not let kids get anywhere near this game, because horrible, horrible things happen to people in this game. They happen to you. They happen to the enemies. They happen to other, you know, NPCs and whatever you come across. It's just, in general, just nightmare fuel incarnate. You don't want to get involved. But also, like Chris, I'm also playing Pal World, finding it, you know, interesting, like he is. Obviously, it's still a game that's still in, like, beta mode. It's still not really finished. It's an early access title. You're still, you know, there's obviously, like, bits and pieces that aren't finished. There's, like, pop-up and, you know, there's stuff like that. It's a survival game, basically. And if you've ever played, like, Valheim or Rust or Ark or any of those games, You know how these games work. You know, you start off with nothing. You have to slowly gather resources, make a basic shelter and an area where you can craft things and all that stuff. The difference is that in this case, you have access to PALs, which are basically just cribs of Pokemon. Like, it's not even subtle. They're, you know, all of the Pokemon you come in contact with are, a lot of them have very similar, you know, designs to Pokemon that you can immediately recognize. And just like in Pokemon, you have to use a device, in this case, a PAL sphere, it's literally called that, to capture them. And in order to capture them, you have to, you know, weaken them up. But unlike in, you know, Pokemon, where you use your Pokemon to do a Pokemon battle and you weaken them, in this case, you have to attack them directly, which in this case means, you know, hitting them with a stick or a gun or, you know, whatever it is that you can hit them with. And unlike in Pokemon, PALs do die. Now, they don't, like, make it, like, horrifically gory or anything when they die. They just kind of keel over with, like, X's over their eyes, and they just kind of roll around. But, I mean, it's the video game cruelty factor is very much in play here. But other than that, I haven't really gotten that far into it. Because survival games are kind of a slow burn for me. They kind of take time. And other than that, I also went back to Pokemon Scarlet, and I'm now at a point where I've beaten all the gym leaders, I've fought all of the Titan Pokemon, and I still have two members of Team Star that I have to go up against. And other than that, I've got, you know, the Pokemon League people to go up against, and there's also a fight against, I think, Arwen that I have to go up against. And then, of course, you know, there's going into the crater. But yeah, so yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, Danner, how about you?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go. It's been a while since I've been on the show, so I've been playing a lot of different stuff. The first thing I'll probably mention is Echoes of the Fallen DLC for Final Fantasy 16. And yeah, this DLC came out the Day of the Game Awards. It was a shadow drop there. And I really enjoyed it. But for the most part, it's really just an extra side quest. And if you've played Final Fantasy 16, you'll know that the side quests are actually fairly easy. They're usually just like fetch quests where you talk to one person, either do a fight or talk to another person and come back to the original person. But with the Echoes of the Fallen DLC, it's pretty much like a full-on quest in the form of another dungeon. So in the main part of the game, you know, there were a lot of dungeons that have you deal with the Master Crystals, and without giving away too much for Echoes of the Fallen, basically they found Dark Crystals, and, you know, the whole game was about getting rid of the crystals in general, so they were wondering where the Dark Crystals even came from. And you come into contact with a character who is, like, sort of a thief, but there's more to him than meets the eye. So, yeah, I don't want to go over too much there, but the DLC is probably around 2 to 3 hours. It's a really long dungeon with around 6 bosses in it. And I'm not going to say it was harder than anything else in the game, but, you know, it definitely was that prior to, like, you know, the real final boss in the game. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. You have to be at a certain point of the game to even access it. You have to have done all of the side quests involving Jill and another character, who I won't mention because of spoilers. But yeah, it was really enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And it was a good opportunity to get back into Final Fantasy 16. And it wasn't really too bad, like, relearning how to play, because I had already beaten the game 2 weeks prior. So it was definitely a fun one. And then I've also started Klonoa Fantasy Reverie series. That was a game that I've been looking forward to for a while, but I've been waiting for it to go on sale. Luckily, this time I didn't have to do that, because it was available on PSN Plus. So I picked that up, and I played part of the first game. It was easier than I remember it being. Actually, I don't even remember if I played this one, because I remember the game being in 3D, and this was a 2D quasi game. So I'm assuming the one that I played back when I was a kid was Klonoa 2. So I hadn't started that one yet, but this one was fairly simplistic. It's pseudo 2D, so most of it is side-scrolling, and then you have to go in the background a lot to pick up all items and stuff like that. And there's nothing hard about it. The main thing that you'll struggle with is really just understanding perspective. There were times where I missed time jumps and fell in a hole. And luckily, when you do die, there aren't too many opportunities, or there aren't... you don't have to do things over again in a bad way. Like, the spawn points are pretty solid. Next up on the list, I've also been playing Like a Dragon Gaiden. I finished it earlier this week. And yeah, I've been playing it in preparation for Infinite Wealth coming out next week. And yeah, this game takes place sort of in between Yakuza 6 and Like a Dragon, Yakuza 7. And you're in control of Kiryu here. And I've never actually played Yakuza 2 through 6. But, you know, the game pretty much spoils what happens. But basically, 6 ended in such a way where, you know, Kiryu is not supposed to exist anymore. And that's pretty much the title. So, you know, I don't want to overspoil things. But the title is, like, you know, the man who lost his name or without a name. And you end up playing another character named Joryu, who in the end is Kiryu. But yeah, the game takes place, as I mentioned, after 6, but during Like a Dragon. And it takes place in certain areas where, you know, in Like a Dragon, you were using Ichiban. And whenever he was not on screen, you pretty much just take over Kiryu from there. And you pretty much see what he was doing leading up to the disbandment of the entire Yakuza forces. So it was pretty cool seeing how that ended up. And obviously, Kiryu is a legend as far as the Yakuza goes. So seeing people, like, react to him and his greatness was really a cool thing to see. And it really had a nice ending where it paid off really well. Usually a lot of Gaiden games aren't really essential to the series, but I really enjoyed this story for what it was, and it definitely made me look forward to Infinite Wealth even more, because it had an ending that carries over to it, and when you beat the game, you actually earn an Infinite Wealth demo. I started that. I didn't get too far. And, you know, it was a little complicated because, obviously, the Yakuza series has moved into turn-based combat, whereas Like a Dragon Gaiden was pretty much the original Yakuza combat. So going from the action combat to the turn-based combat was a little complicated, but, you know, once Infinite Wealth comes out next week, we'll go ahead and have our impressions there, because I'm really looking forward to that game. But yeah, it was definitely a cool experience. As for how the game pulls you in, like I mentioned, it's like a traditional Yakuza game, except that you're really only in one small part of a city. You're in Sotenbori, and, you know, almost all of your traditional Yakuza fanfare is there. You have the mini games, you have the various stalls that you can eat at, you have the stupid side quests. And it's funny because a lot of the side quests, while optional, are also sort of required, because there's no progressing in the game unless you get a certain amount of points that you get from these side quests in order to move the story forward. So, you know, you can do these in any order that you'd like, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in a place called the castle, where you see things like, you know, gambling and arena fighting and those sorts of things, like, again, pretty much just traditional RPG fanfare for Kirby to get involved in. And yeah, all these were really enjoyable, but it really felt like filler. So the filler parts, you know, can be called annoying, but they were still enjoyable. But the story was really what tied it all together and made me really enjoy it. And then next up, I started Golden Sun. The game came out earlier this week on the Switch. And, you know, for those of you that know me, Golden Sun was pretty much my foray into RPGs, not including Pokemon, you know. But the one thing that kind of disappointed me, and, you know, it's not really surprising, is the fact that playing Golden Sun scaled up on the Switch isn't as attractive as it was on the GBA back in the day. You know, the Game Boy Advance had such a small screen, and sprites and the art style really fit that platform. Whereas with the bigger screen of the Switch, everything looks a whole lot more pixelated. And I just remember the game looking a whole lot better than it does now. But either way, like, it's good to jump back into Golden Sun. I hope this one is successful so that they continue to make new Golden Sun games. And, you know, I just love the series, so I hope to see it continue. And then I also started another code recollection demo that they had on the eShop. The game came out on Friday. We actually have a code for it, but Miles Abenza will be the one reviewing it for us whenever he's finished. And I thought the game was just like a visual novel, but there's actually some walking simulator stuff to it. And from what I've played so far, the art style and the animation really lends itself well to the Switch. And I look forward to digging deeper as we move forward. But yeah, we're entering that time where game releases, especially JRPG releases, are going to get really heavy. In fact, I already started one that I can't talk about. And yeah, it's going to be a fun next 2 months here. So that's about it.
All right. So let's get to some news. And first up here, we've got your Game Pass lineup for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
With some interesting stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Available as of now, there is Those Who Remain, which is a horror game, mm-hmm. first-person horror game. So you can check that out. Console and PC. Also available, Turnip Boy Robs a Bank. The mm-hmm. second of the Turnip Boy games of you're just playing a character that just causes mischief the entire time. This one's, you're shaking down hostages, stealing valuables, battling the fuzz, and using wacky tools bought off the dark web. So yeah. Still doing more weird stuff. So there you go for that. That's on console and PC. There's F123 on console and PC. This is part of EA Play. So if you have EA Play subscription on any of the platforms, that's available to you. So you can check out the newest F1 game.
Mm-hmm.
There's Pal World, which Brandon and I talked about. So
yep.
You can check that out for yourself. Let's see. Okay. For stuff coming out this week on the 25th, Go Mecha Ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a day one launch, console and PC. It's a twin stick shooter, roguelike. Okay. So
yeah.
Got that kind of game there. Let's see. Brotato. This is a mm-hmm. Vampire Survivors like. But instead of it being more of a clone of Vampire Survivors, you play as a potato kind of character who has four guns attached to their body. Mm-hmm. Essentially like the four corners of their character skin.
Yeah.
Doing that. So you got to swap them in and out, that kind of stuff. As you're taking down enemies in waves of fights and that, you know, doing your upgrades and all that kind of stuff. So that one's pretty solid. That'll be on console and PC Game Pass on January 30th. Let's see, February 2nd, Persona 3 Reload. That'll be available, so you can check that out. They're putting out that remake of Persona 3. That'll still have you shooting your characters in the head to evoke their personas. And all the weird stuff that happens in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to check that out. And then February 6th, Anduchard.
Mm.
Console and PC. I think this is an RPG. Go forth, battle monsters, solve puzzles, and restore Anduchard mm-hmm. to its former skyward glory. Okay. That could be anything, the way that's framed.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Some pretty neat stuff for people to check out. So, mm-hmm. yeah. There you go. And then let's see here. We got some more news. Some sad news here. Harmonix mm-hmm. announced that Rock Band DLC for Rock Band 4 will be ending here as of this week on January 25th. They'll be releasing the last DLC here, as they've said it's going to be
mm-hmm.
Some emblematic stuff for the way they're feeling. But because I think this past week, they released Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trogs, Our Love Will Still Be There.
Yeah.
Which I've seen some good jokes that they should release like 10 songs titled outro for the last week, which would be a pretty good joke. But I think they'll probably have something special as they ended Rock Band 3 DLC with Donald McLean's American Pie.
Yeah.
So I imagine I'll have something nice there. To put out for Rock Band 4, so we'll see how that goes. It's been, I think, 8 years for this game, which is a lot longer than you might have expected for Rock Band 4 that did not exactly like come out of the gates selling incredibly well. But they have, you know, stuck with it, kind of kept releasing DLC most weeks for the past 8 years. And yeah, it's a great run. Great run for a great game. they're going to be sort of focusing their teams on Fortnite Festival for the time being, as part of Fortnite. So, as I believe they're also going to be adding support for physical guitars, guitar controllers, making new ones. So that'll be neat to see, as well as having new guitars for people to play Rock Band with, I believe. So that'll be cool whenever they get that out. But that's been kind of a poorly kept secret. Is I think the, I forget which one, PDP or whoever's been, whoever's going to be making the guitars has been like hinting at this for the past month or so.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah. Good run for Rock Band 4. Especially as Guitar Hero kind of sunk pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. For games that are going to be releasing sometime soon, Foam Stars finally has a release date. It's going to be hitting February 6th on PS5 and PS4. It's exclusive for those platforms. And, yeah, it'll also be on PlayStation Plus Essential as a monthly title for February. So we already know what one of the three titles is going to be. As I say here, there's three modes available at launch. Smash the Star, which I think is maybe Capture the Flag or King of the Hill type of mode. There's Happy Bass Survival, which I think is, yes, like a, they split up the teams half and half, half inside the arena, half outside. And you're taking the, you know, out the opposing team's players inside the arena.
Yep.
So that's neat. And then the last one's Rubber Duck Party. Okay, this one might be the maybe more formal, like King of the Hill mode. Or maybe the like the Team Fortress 2, where you're escorting a duck to your side of the arena. Something like that, so you have to get near them. That kind of thing. So yeah, looks like it'll have a decent amount of stuff in it. I believe it'll be $30 otherwise. Once it's out of PS Plus, so if you have PS Plus, definitely check it out. But then we got the weird news that the devs have mentioned that they are, or they were experimenting with generative AI artwork. That made these album art for the like in-game music player. That's kind of a weird thing, and as they try to defend, like, this makes up about 0.01% or even less in terms of content in the game, but we have dabbled in it by creating these icons in the game. And it's like, in terms of amount, it's not much at all, but in terms of using it at all, it's pretty shitty. Because, you know, they have artists, as obvious by them making the rest of the art in the game. And it's like, if you use that as, you know, reference art for your artist to make these little bits of art, they'll be perfectly fine. But they said, you know, that they liked it so much that they put it in the game using a Midjourney, which I believe was one of the ones especially known for stealing content, licensed content from artists. So yeah, it's one of those where you could pretty easily have it recreate, you know, licensed art if you want. So yeah, as if I'm going to add a bit of a downside to that whole game's appeal.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, definitely some weird stuff. I mean, going back to Foam Stars in general, I think it's a good move for them to go ahead and start off on PS Plus Essential, just because, you know, you never know what kind of audience that you can generate here. So starting with a quote-unquote free audience would definitely be a good way to get a head start, especially with the success that we've seen from games like Fall Guys and the initial release of Fortnite. So, you know, hopefully something good happens there. And then just moving forward to the AI, like, yeah, it's pretty scummy, especially since they actually decided to resort to using AI for creative work, knowing that they do have artists there. But, you know, I also wonder how big or small their studio is. Like, There are definitely scenarios where using AI stuff is okay, in my opinion. Like, for example, when you're doing things on Photoshop that require certain macros or, you know, certain things that are easy to do, and AI would be the easiest way to do it. Like, for example, you can just type in, oh, remove all this and do all that. And yeah, that would help. But as far as like doing things like stealing from other art styles, yeah, I don't really like that. So it's bad to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe the developers are an internal Square Enix team for this. So yeah, it's essentially Square Enix funding that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's kind of a weird way to kind of take the wind out of your sails for this game.
Mm-hmm.
From people that would love to jump into this kind of game. So,
mm-hmm.
We'll just see how that goes. And yeah, we'll get up to the next one here. Frostpunk 2 got a bit of a big trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Showing off how extremely unpleasant the game is going to be. Mm-hmm. Much like the original. As you know, the original, you're kind of doing a city building kind of thing set in this sort of freezing apocalypse where you're trying to lay out your city to help keep everybody warm and all that, and as well as like sending people out to do expeditions and get more supplies and that kind of stuff. Accomplish all those kind of goals, and yeah, they're making a new one, and it still looks really good. Making a more complex, I don't know how much more complex, but a bit more complex as like an unforgiving city builder kind of game, which is definitely what people want more of that of a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It's set 30 years after the original game. Citizens can vote to pass laws. Those kind of decisions can help steer the city's direction towards different outcomes and finales. So that's pretty cool. They do not have a date yet, but they're saying the first half of 2024. And it'll be on PC Game Pass at launch. Yeah, as well as Steam, the Epic Games Store, and GOG. It'll also come to Game Pass on Xbox Series X at a later date, as well as the PS5. But that may be by the end of the year or early next year. We'll have to see. But yeah, good to see that game showing up again. As that first game was really good. Let's see. Next up here, GSC Game World. Kind of been working on Stalker 2 for quite a while, and they finally announced a new date for that. September 5th. So they're putting it out pretty far ahead of where they're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
As I guess they were targeting Q1 of this year at some point. And then they've announced this to put it firmly in the fall release window.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to check that out. Hopefully in September.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been talking about how challenging the development of this has been for the past couple of years, as they have had a bunch of people living in Ukraine as that was being ransacked by Russia and attacked, and had as many people as they could evacuate their homes to get out of there, as well as have lost at least one employee to the warfare there. So they put out a big trailer. Hopefully have the final release dates, which is bold of them to call this the final release date announcement trailer. So
seriously,
so hopefully they don't have to delay it again. Yeah, that'll be on Game Pass, I believe. So yeah, there you go. Something else to keep an eye out for in like 7 months, seven, 8 months. So there you go for that. And yeah, we got the Tomb Raider 1-3 remastered remastered, I think starring Laura Croft as the full title for that. But we finally have details on what the array of options and such that game is going to have, as that is hitting here of February, I think the 22nd, 21st, something like that. February 14th. Yeah, let's see what they have mentioned here. They mentioned the improvements happening in engineering, gameplay, and art. So they kind of go here. At the outset, we Nui would use the original source code and engine. Magic can't simply be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Critical feature for any updates we made was to allow the users to toggle back to the original look and feel of Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they have done that. So the gameplay stuff, they have every jump, secret enemy, and puzzle exactly as the original development team designed and intended.
Mm.
And so now they've upgraded it, so they have classic and modern controls.
Mm-hmm.
Listed as, I think, tank and modern controls.
Mm.
So the modern controls... let's see, the right stick has full camera control, and Lara moves directionally based on camera position.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken inspiration from the later Tomb Raider games, like Legend, Anniversary, and Underworld.
Mm-hmm.
So those games on the PS2 and Xbox and PS3 and Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
They added boss health bars that you can turn on, so mm-hmm. you can have a better idea of how much health the bosses have left.
Mm-hmm.
For when managing your inventory and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They've updated the 3D item sprites
mm-hmm.
To look better as like 3D models for these characters. They have 200 trophies. Mm. Not sure if they have each game has their own platinum. I don't think they mention that here, but they do have photo mode, so you can do that, as well as more surprises.
Mm-hmm.
And then the art stuff, they talk about being able to swap back and forth between the classic visuals and the modern art,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't change the visuals that much.
Mm.
It's more like, as they say here, baked in real time lighting effects, upgrading like the water and the texturing and all that kind of stuff. Having some new models, like Lara Croft has new models for this, so she doesn't have like the triangular boobs, that kind of thing.
Yep.
To it. As well as other stuff, visual effects and all that. So, yeah. Looks like it's going to be a pretty comprehensive set of features here to make the game look and play better if you are not a fan of the original control style.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be out in about 3 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
For people to check out. So, yeah. That'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Last of the regular stories. There's this weird lawsuit that's happening where Take-Two has filed a trademark dispute over Remedy's logo, mm-hmm. saying it is too similar to Rockstar's logo, which doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
They're both R's, but that's about as much as it, as the similarities are.
Mm-hmm.
Remedy on there, R has like these kind of water kind of ripples.
Yeah.
To add like more R's to it, I guess, more parts of the R to it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing with the word Remedy under it, whereas the Rockstar logo, the classic Rockstar logo, is mm-hmm. An R with a star attached to the bottom right corner of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, other than the R, I don't understand what the trademark issue is here. And very much, I think, Remedy has responded to this saying, this is not a big deal.
Mm.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Especially because, go ahead.
I would agree that it's not a big deal either. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, this Remedy logo is actually new. I may be wrong, but at the same time,
last summer.
Gotcha. See, like Remedy and Rockstar are working together on a new Max Payne game anyway, so it's funny just having these guys in the studios like working on a cool game, and they're like, oh, the lawyers upstairs are fighting over our logo, so it's pretty stupid because I know that there has to be a way for this to end amicably, and it probably won't.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's just a. Like, I don't know what Rockstar's complaining about. It's the letter R. A lot of companies use the letter R. Like, you might as well sue the Pokemon company for Team Rocket. It's dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that it's Rockstar initiated this. Seems like it's Take-Two doing this as like a... I don't know, like they're detached from what Rockstar is working on. Because, yeah, Rockstar and Remedy are working together on remakes of Max Payne 1 and 2. That's like, all right, why are you suing the company you're working with?
Yeah.
And they may not have been super aware of that in a weird way, their lawyers at least. So, yeah, it just seems very weird to have this be a big issue. But, yeah, there you go. Yeah, these were filed in the UK, so I don't know if there are issues there with that. But yeah, they filed these back in May 2023, so took a while for these to surface or people to figure it out, notice them. So we'll see how that goes, but I assume there'll be something minor to do with it, but I don't think Remedy's going to have to change anything. So yeah, there you go for that. We'll move off to the bad news.
Yeah.
As the layoffs have continued in this early part of 2024, we have Thunderful laying off about 100 people, or they will be laying off about 100 people, as they announced plans to lay off roughly 20% of its workforce. Yeah, it's about 100 people. And the Thunderful CEO, citing the company's need to reduce costs, as he started there this past fall. So they've sort of evaluated the company and their business going into the future and have identified probably some need to reduce the amount of people they have working there to, I don't know, have less payroll on the on the sheets. I don't know. But yeah. These kind of announcements are always kind of weird because it's probably makes for a worse atmosphere inside the company to be like, oh, there's going to be 100 of us getting laid off. Any chance that people working there are going to know at least a handful of people getting laid off, if not, you know, a bunch of them, depending on what departments get hit the most. So, yeah, that's not great, especially as they got a bunch of stuff they've been working on. So, yeah, Thunderful there. Taking some layoffs. Dead by Daylight has already laid off 45 people. That's a lot of people, mostly or only affected people at their Montreal, Canada studio, with those being laid off between January 9th and 11th. So I guess the bright side there is that that stuff, a lot of those people occurred after the holidays, so they got to at least enjoy that. But they may have also laid off some people beforehand in December, cutting from various people throughout the studio, unfortunately. So yeah, there you go. For that. And then the last one here, CI Games, publisher of Lords of the Fallen, has laid off 10% of its staff. I think people have tried to figure out how many they have working there to get an idea what that number could be, but it seems like people haven't figured that out just yet. But yeah, they use the same excuse to preserve business strength and stability. So that means to make it easier for them to make money, I guess. So there you go. More layoffs, in case you're hoping 2024 is going to be better than 2023.
Yeah, it's just a rough story. You know, a lot of us with our Game of the Year segments last year were talking about, you know, it being the best year in gaming, but also being one of the worst just because of all the layoffs we've seen. And, you know, well, we saw maybe 9,000 last year, and then going up to this year, we've already seen maybe close to 3,000 to 4,000 now, which is like almost half, and it's been 21 days. That's really unfortunate, and it's like there's no saving grace here. It's like, oh, cool. I guess you guys are off the hook because you guys got to work over the holidays. But I don't know. It's just, it just really sucks, and I feel for everybody going through it. And you know, when this stuff happened in the past, the industry was good at taking care of each other, and now it's really hard. Like I've been active on LinkedIn a lot, not because I'm looking for a job, but just because I've been trying to help other people who have lost theirs. And like, there's a huge contingent of people just like, you know, posting whatever they can post. But then I've seen people who have gotten gotten an opportunity only to be like laid off 2 weeks later. It's a mess right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the bad news here for the week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to something a little bit better. The Xbox Developer Direct, as they said ahead of time, it was going to feature 4 games. Ended up being 5. They had a surprise thing, but not any sort of shadow drop game.
Mm.
They featured 4 games from various Xbox studios.
Yeah.
And then Visions of Mana from Square Enix for the surprise other game, which is not a huge surprise. It's just we knew that was coming, but they showed off a bunch of gameplay stuff. In case you wondered how that played, but we'll work our way through these pretty quickly. There's Avowed, which for whatever reason on the Xbox Wire website, they did not write an article for that game.
Mm-hmm.
They did for the others. I tried to double check, and yeah, there wasn't anything for that one for whatever reason. But the description in the main article gives a pretty good idea of what the video they showed off there, which was mostly combat stuff, and how they have kind of a lot more freedom to decide how you're going to do combat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As you have melee weapons, you can map to both hands or one hand, ranged guns and bows, as well as magic based wands, even dual wielding wands, for that kind of stuff. So, kind of allows you to quickly change between loadouts and kind of have more faster pace and dynamic kind of combat than like a Skyrim had for this kind of thing. But that was a lot more of a slower combat style, even for what you had to head on offer there. So that looks pretty neat, but we did not get any sort of dates on that. As they have, let's see, that'll be launching this fall. Only one game of the bunch here got a date. Everything else got like a time frame to launch in. So that's Xbox, PC, and on Game Pass for Avowed. So maybe see that by the end of this year. Then we got Hellblade 2, Senua's Saga. That looks really good.
Oh, yeah. The first game was amazing.
Yeah, and this one has a much higher combat focus to it.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me a good bit of like God of War's combat, the 2018 game.
Yeah.
With the way they were kind of showing that off. So, yeah, kind of showing off some of the combat stuff as well as some of the motion capture stuff they've been working on for that. So that's pretty cool looking. That'll be out May 21st. PC, Xbox, and Game Pass. So you'll be able to check that out in about 4 months from now. And then, yeah, the Visions of Mana was sort of the surprise game as they got to put out a big gameplay trailer for that game.
Yep.
It looks pretty good. Has a nice look to it and all that. Has definitely some elements of the original games being sort of an action RPG, but you got a big 3D world to explore, as well as some Breath of the Wild style kind of ways to get around and sort of float around and do all that kind of stuff as you're attacking enemies and all that. But it also has kind of some Ni No Kuni type of stuff where you're kind of running into enemies and it kind of sections off a big arena around you of space to fight those enemies. So you're not going to necessarily fight enemies and have others join the fight and that kind of stuff. Maybe there will in some aspects, but from what they've shown here, looks pretty solid. I don't know, I could say it's looking like, you know, maybe Final Fantasy 16 style of great combat. But it looks pretty solid from what they showed there. And then they've shown off a bunch of music and style stuff, sort of how they're keeping the homages to the original games with a lot of their music influences and art style influences and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, looks pretty solid from what they've shown. But yeah, no dates or anything on that. I'm just saying it'll be out this summer, And that'll be on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
Yeah.
For that, so you'll be able to check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, we got Ara History Untold, which is their Civilization competitor.
Mm-hmm.
From Oxide Games. And, yeah, they're definitely making one of those, but trying to feature different civilizations and that kind of stuff to it that you wouldn't necessarily get or haven't gotten in Civilization so far.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I don't know if they mention anything here specifically. But yeah, they're still kind of in prototyping phases, taking feedback from the community, that kind of stuff. And they seem to plan to keep that going once it launches, kind of letting the community kind of dictate what they're going to keep working on there. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is, I think, another fall game that'll just be on PC.
Mm-hmm.
And PC Game Pass, so no console versions, at least for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
For that, but yeah, you can read a lot more here if you want to learn more about that. Or watch the, I assume they put out the videos, the trailer on YouTube. So you can check that out. And then, yeah, the last one they had here is Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Mm-hmm. The new Indiana Jones game from Machine Games.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be on Xbox and PC and Game Pass. And it'll be a first-person sort of action-adventure game.
Yeah.
Where you're playing as a version of Indiana Jones, I think, set between the second and third movies.
Mm-hmm.
As he's a bit older, but not that old. I believe Troy Baker's doing the voice of Indiana Jones. So trying to do as much of a Harrison Ford kind of voice there.
Yeah.
But yeah, they make a big focus of showing that you're doing a lot of whip stuff for fighting enemies to knock them over or, you know, tie them up, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. As well as you can use it for some platforming stuff.
Mm.
But you can also punch and occasionally shoot enemies as needed. But also solve puzzles and all that kind of stuff and get around these levels. So it looks like it'd be pretty good. What to see. But yeah, that'll be... Yeah, they didn't put any sort of time frame even. They just said 2024. So that may end up slipping to next year if it needs to. But yeah, it'll look pretty decent there. So anything you guys liked out of this one?
Obviously I liked the Indiana Jones one, mostly because I'd been wondering what Machine Games had been up to, since, you know, what they had been working on, you know, after Wolfenstein basically went silent for a while. And now we know it's this. It means we get to beat up more Nazis. So, you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
And Hellblade 2 also definitely is something I'm interested in. I loved the first one. I thought it was an amazing game. And Avowed, I'm not entirely sure yet, but I'm intrigued. Because I love the Pillars of Eternity games, and I kind of want to see what they're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, shout out to Wario64, because I totally forgot about this presentation despite actually looking forward to it. And, you know, that being said, this was actually the best one they've ever done, in my opinion. All the games look really good. You know, not all of them are for me. I will say, though, Avowed was something that I never actually cared about. But then when I saw what they showed here, I was like, okay, this might be something to put on my radar. And, you know, it's going to be on Game Pass, so why not? Moving on to Hellblade 2, like, you know, this was the first Xbox Series X announced game. And so, like, we're here at, like, what, year three, year four, and it's finally coming out. We finally have a date. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm still a little bitter because with the original game, I played it on PS4, and I missed the platinum because I missed one rune that I totally, like, saw but didn't get, and there's no way to go back to it, and I don't want to replay the game to get it. So that's annoying, but, you know, now that I'm going to play on Xbox, it's not going to matter. I'm going to get to enjoy the game for what it is, and it looks great. you know? This is sort of becoming the new Deathloop, where they just keep showing it nonstop, and we just need the game to come out already. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Visions of Mana is interesting, and the reason why this is interesting to me is because it's not a Game Pass game. That being said, like, why would I buy it on Xbox when you have it basically everywhere? So it's going to be interesting because, you know, Persona 3 Reload is going to be a Game Pass game. And, you know, that's definitely a great way to, like, have some attention there. It's what caused me to cancel my pre-order on PS5 because you know, I don't want to have to pay for it if I don't have to. And we'll go from there. And with Visions of Mana, like, Mana has never been a system-selling series. So I wonder how many eyes it'll get, you know, despite this presentation here, if it's not on Game Pass. And again, it'll be on every platform, so it's hard for me to care to get it on this one. But I'm glad it was here because the game looks good. I never finished the Trials of Mana remake, but Visions of Mana just looks a whole lot better, just for what it's worth. Aura, didn't really care much about that one because I don't play PC games, and that's pretty much only what it's for. And then the big one, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. This is a title that I've been looking forward to ever since they showed the logo. And while I think the title is pretty stupid, I am looking forward to this game just because it looks awesome. I will say, though, I am not really pleased with it being in first person, although I totally get it. Machine Games has been doing a wonderful job with, you know, the Wolfenstein games and all that. And, like, you know, killing Nazis is typically what they've always been about. And from what I've seen, the puzzles look really fun, and certain methods of traversal, like, you know, climbing walls and stuff, is happening in third person. So you do have that cinematic feel there. I just, you know, this is not the kind of game I wanted to be in first person, and I wish we had, like, that being an optional thing. But, you know, if it ends up being better for it, I'm all for it. You know, Todd Howard is a genius with everything he does, and looking forward to it. But I am, you know, just a little disappointed that it's in first person. So that's about it, though.
All right. So, yeah. It seems like a perfectly fine thing. I think a lot of this stuff is so far out, it's kind of hard to get excited about any of it just yet. Even the one that has a date is still 4 months away. Or still got a bunch of games to play before then. So I'll wait to see how the other stuff gets dates that'll actually hit these dates, these time frames they're saying. So, but yeah, some neat stuff. Keep an eye on that. But yeah, I think that'll end up doing it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and interesting things to talk about as we get near the end of the month. And yeah, we'll see you all next time. We'll talk about what is out this next week. Yeah, there's Like a Dragon.
Yeah, Infinite Like Wolf, a Dragon, and
yeah.
Tekken 8. The Apollo Justice trilogy.
Yep.
For some stuff there. And then Grand Blue Fantasy Relink and Persona 3 Reload are the week after that. So.
Yep. Busy times.
Yeah. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers. They've also been dealing with the cold weather all week. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.